Shia factions in South Lebanon further joined forces with the Palestinian resistance organizations. Now, this collective resistance may lose powerful figures such as Iran Soleimani or Iraq's al-Muhandis, but the movement is a crawling but living juggernaut.
Israeli regime knows well that if it wasn't for Iran's support, the resistance in Palestine wouldn't last long. The Israelis believe that removing Iran means beheading the resistance movement. Israel's acts of sabotage, enmity and animosity towards Iran are all because Iran, when it comes to the issue of Palestine, respects values that have unfortunately lost their attractiveness for some Arab countries. These values are so significant for Iran that it is ready to pay its costs. But it is sad to say that the Arab normalizers of ties with Israel pay attention only to the benefits they can gain from the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Which began and what is are facts in hand. But the future also seems to be coming to the fore, with extreme measures speeding up historical change. Question is Israel overdoing it and moving towards self-destruction given the resistance movement continues to stand firm? Voices broadcast out of Israel have sounded desperate as of late. But the fact on the ground remains, Israeli and Palestinian estimates indicate there are about 650,000 settlers living in 164 settlements and 116 outposts in the West Bank, including in occupied Jerusalem, according to AA.
No, of course, in light of the current international equation that formed the Zionist entity and still depends on it as an advanced base, it's not possible to find a solution, whatever solution could be. We saw Oslo agreements in the year 1993 and their outcomes after 30 years. Of course, there haven't been any results except a big decline on the ground. For instance, there have been more and more settlements and confiscations of lands. For all these reasons, there is no hope of a political solution. The only horizon in front of us is resistance, which is the feasible solution. At the end of the day, the Zionist entity does not have roots in this region and no extension.
Looking at the international law, Iran's solution for the Israel-Palestine conflict is very fair and reasonable. But the realities in the international arena and in the region have created a condition that makes it seem impossible to achieve. But this is not true. The solution suggested by Iran is an ideal which can be fulfilled through long-term planning. The Islamic Republic of Iran says that the Palestinians, who are the real owners of this land but have been expelled from their own country, should return, and those who do not belong to this land but have usurped it must leave, and then the Palestinian nationals, Christians, Muslims and Jews, decide for their own destiny via referendum. They should make a decision about the type of government they want in their country. This is the most democratic plan.
What would be favorable results of resistance to the present crisis ought to be the choice of the Palestinians. In 2020, Iran came up with a logical proposal that Palestinians be allowed internationally to hold a referendum to decide the fate of the occupied lands. That would mean a vote by all original and historical inhabitants of the occupied territories, both those who are still there and those who have been displaced. This would include Muslims, Christians, and Jews and their descendants, all original Palestinians. Iran even presented its initiative entitled National Referendum in Palestine to the United Nations. Plenty more to come, but first a quick media break to see what other outlets have to say on the matter. Looking at other outlets, it seems Palestine has potential for more than just the news. Tehran Times reads, IRIB welcomes Rutstay by screening films on Palestine. IRIB, or the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, will be showing 7 movies on the Namoyesh Network, an IRIB channel for screening films, in a week-long program. The beginning film is Naghi al-Ali by Egyptian filmmaker Atif el-Tayyib, about Palestinian cartoonist Naghi al-Ali, who was assassinated in London in 1987. He was noted for his political criticism of the Arab regimes and Israel in his works. Iranian director Habib Kavosh's 1990 drama Hidden Fire has also been chosen to be screened. Another film in the program is The Buried Secret by Iranian director Ali Ghaffari. The film is about Amir Kalakish, also known as Abu Zainab, a resistance fighter who died during an operation against an Israeli convoy in 1985. His operation killed 12 troopers in the Israeli occupation forces and wounded 14 others. Iranian director Jamal Shouje's 33 Days, a film on the Israeli 33-day war of 2006 against Lebanon, will also be screened. Iranian director Parviz Sheikhzadeh's 2009 anti-Zionist drama Saturday's Hunter is a highlight of the program. The film is about a boy and his grandfather who execute Arab civilians in order to steal their land. Now, Quds Day is all about supporting the Palestinian cause, and Tasnim News runs the headline, Iran urges Muslim world strong message in support of Palestine. The foreign minister of Iran expressed hope that Muslim governments, parliaments and nations would throw their weight behind the Palestinian people and condemn the Zionist regime's atrocities ahead of the International Quds Day. The top Iranian diplomat, Amir Abdullahian, strongly condemned the desecration of the holy site of Al-Aqsa Mosque by the Zionist regime, saying, "We witness crimes at the hands of Zionists on a daily basis at Al-Aqsa Mosque." Now it's from film to cartoon. IGNA reads, call for International Cartoon Festival of Al-Quds announced. The festival will be held with 2 focus topics of normalization, betrayal, and misery of Nakba Day. The efforts to normalize relations between some Arab and Islamic countries with the Israeli regime and the closeness of Nakba Day with this year's Quds Day have been named as the reason for choosing these themes. June the 21st has been announced as the deadline for sending cartoons. The top winner will receive an honorary diploma plus €1,500. The event is organized by ABNA News Agency in collaboration with the Committee for the Support of the Islamic Revolution of the Palestinian People, Center for Strategic Studies of Shahid Fazil, Iraq, that is, Islamic Relief Center of Bahrain, Artistic District of the Islamic Revolution, that's Iran, and Comprehensive Website of Islamic Art. That'll be it for the news section. Iran, a regional superpower and supporter of Palestinian rights and Muslim pride, is a nuisance to Israel. So what's amounted to Iran's regional influence today and a JCPOA it might have revived with the Vienna talks have been cause for serious concern to Israel. It was during the Vienna JCPOA talks that Israel, without a shadow of a doubt, sabotaged Iran's Natanz nuclear facility, among other acts of hostility. The question arises, how effective has the reaction and strategy of a Palestinian and Islamic resistance been?
The Palestinians' strategy of resistance have so far proved to be fruitful because they have made many achievements through this resistance, such as freeing part of their occupied territories, creating a condition of balanced power with Israel, and proving to the world that a nation called Palestine exists on this earth. If it were not for their sacrifices, today we would have not had Palestine anymore. Above all, they have been able to establish a government. In the past, Israel used to do military operations anywhere safely. But today, before jumping into action, it assesses all the aspects of any operation because it is worried about the reaction of Palestinians.
To stop annexation by now right-wing-run Israel is going to take a lot more than suggestion. Talking of annexation, here's an instance Netanyahu maneuvered on. Annexation of the Jordan Valley was first proposed in the 1967 Alon Plan. But later, in September 2019, it was announced by the then-Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as his plan, subject to the outcome of the September 2019 Israeli legislative election. Looking at the desperate situation of dead ends wherever Palestinians turn to, it's no wonder Quds Day is respite. Today, Jerusalem, as Trump's preferred capital of Israel, and the Jordan Valley are not the only sore spots with the people of the region and Muslim world. The United States recognized the Golan Heights as part of Israel through a presidential proclamation signed by Donald Trump on March 25, 2019. This made the United States the first country to recognize Israeli rather than Syrian sovereignty over the Golan Heights region. In 2020, the U.S. actually embarrassed itself with proposing the notorious bound-to-fail deal of the century, what Iran calls treason of the century. This Trump or Kushner plan was officially titled Peace to Prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people. It claimed to be the road to resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or Israeli-imposed conflict with Palestine. Practically, the plan would have given Palestinians comfort for their country. It's no wonder any Palestinians that might have considered a two-state solution still boycotted Trump's peace plan and so had him scrap U.S. funding to pressure them into allowing Israeli expansionism. Now, using the word expansionism in relation to Israel goes to show that entity is truly a modern-day invading force that has no business taking from or sharing with Palestinians. And any West Asian accepting the notion is doing so either to take what he can or only out of sympathy with what's now fourth-generation Israelis. Since the 2021 U.S. elections, eyes have been turned to current U.S. President Joe Biden and his role in the peace process or no process. But Israeli right-wing parties, which dominate the political arena, reject the two-state solution and call for the annexation of about a third of the West Bank. Recently, they have really moved up close to the West Bank. Even in those days when corona was rampaging, there was no respite, even for Palestinian kids behind bars with no charge. By Quds Day 2021, there were no less than 4,500 Palestinians in Israeli jails. Of the thousands behind bars, 430 were administrative detainees held without charge or trial, including 180 children and 41 women and girls. There were 550 prisoners suffering from various illnesses, including 11 with cancer and 7 with kidney failure and heart disease. That'll be it for today, although Quds lives on to receive a lot more coverage. Do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after. Thanks from the whole team. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
وَلَقَدْ يَسَّرْنَا الْقُرْآنَ لِلذِّكْرِ فَهَلْ مِن مُدَّكِرٍ
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, in last episode, a fortnight ago, we started explanation of Surah Ar-Rahman, which is considered the crown of the Noble Quran, since it opens with the word Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, thus proclaiming one of the most beautiful attributes of the Almighty Creator. This surah highlights the All-Merciful Lord's wonders of creation, describes the end of the material world, and paints an evocative picture of the delights of paradise. Hell is briefly contrasted in Ayah 43 with the joys that await the righteous. The refrain, فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ, which means, so which of your Lord's bounties will you both mankind and jinn deny, runs throughout the surah. We continue from where we left you, and here are ayahs 7, 8, and 9 of the surah.
وَالسَّمَاءَ رَفَعَهَا وَوَضَعَ الْمِيزَانَ أَلَّا تَطْغَوْا فِي الْمِيزَانِ وَأَقِيمُوا الْوَزْنَ بِالْقِسْطِ وَلَا تُخْسِرُوا الْمِيزَانَ.
He raised the sky and set up the balance, declaring, do not infringe the balance, and maintain the weights with justice, and do not shorten the balance. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah a fortnight ago, we said the solar system, at the center of which is the sun and includes human life on planet Earth, exists as per precise calculations and functions in the most orderly manner. The universe has been created in a way as to provide the best services to the best of creation, that is, the human beings, most of whom, unfortunately, are ungrateful to God and destroyers of the world of nature, without realizing these wondrous divine blessings. In contrast, the celestial bodies as well as other forms of creation on earth, such as mountains, rivers, oceans, herbs and trees, are obedient to the one and only Creator. The ayahs that we now recited mean to say that God has raised the sky, which appears as a magnificent canopy adorned with galaxies that appear as glittering stars to us, and encourages us to contemplate on the wonders of creation, which are manifest proofs of the infinite power and exaltedness of the Lord Most High, who has also granted us the concept of balance to realize the measure of all things, including evaluation of our own actions. He has warned us against disturbing the balance of things with exhortation to maintain justice in society by first observing weights and measures in our dealings with each other without the least cheating or deceit. Here, it would not be out of context to cite a famous saying from the Prophet's vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the symbol of justice in society, while inspecting the marketplace. O merchants, ask God Almighty for good. Find divine blessing in being lenient toward people. Refrain from telling lies in transactions. abstain from injustice, be not involved in usury. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the universe is based on perfect order, with the celestial bodies that appear as glittering lights in the canopy of a sky far above, following fixed courses with measured out calculation. Number two, among the wonders of the universe is the balanced placing of all things in their respective spheres, which in turn require us to maintain justice in society, since disturbing of the calculated measures of creation, whether in the environment around us or our own unjust actions, leads to devastation of the world of nature and our own self-destruction, besides the punishment that awaits the disbelievers and sinners on Judgment Day. Number three, as the creation is based on balance and order, the raising of prophets, imams, and saints is also aimed at ensuring guidance for human beings, with emphasis on righteousness, justice, virtue, which are interconnected. And number four, balance may be applied in all matters, including beliefs and ethics, and whatever may be essayed in everyday life, so that people may not be wronged in transactions or incur loss in other affairs. We invite you to listen to ayahs 10, 11, 12, and 13 of the same surah in conclusion of this week's episode.
وَالْأَرْضَ وَضَعَهَا لِلْأَنَابِ فِيهَا فَاكِهَةٌ وَالنَّخْلُ ذَاتُ الْأَكْمَامِ وَالْحَبُّ ذُو الْعَصْفِ وَالرَّيْحَانِ فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ.
And the earth, he laid it out for mankind. In it are fruits and date palms with sheaths, grain with husk, and fragrant herbs. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Among the divine blessings is the creation of planet Earth with all its wondrous forms of life and inanimate objects as the cradle for the comfort and flourishing of human beings, who have been granted different types of provisions to eat and enjoy, such as a variety of fruits and vegetables and grains, including wheat, rice, barley, millets, etc., as well as various fragrant plants and flowers to take pleasure from. Divine bounties encompass all our life and the environment around us, as irrefutable proof of God's omnipotence, graciousness, and mercy, which cannot be denied, although many people fail to recognize and realize these realities. Thus, the rhetorical question posed by Ayah 13, which is repeated after every few ayahs, as a reminder to make both mankind and genies reflect upon the blessings of the all-merciful Creator by opening their mind's eye and taking stock of themselves and their deeds. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, cognizance of divine bounties results in consciousness of His power and wisdom, which in turn make us humble and obedient to Him. Number two, fruits and vegetables play a very important role in nutrition, while dates have high nutritious value, and for this reason have been mentioned separately. Number three, the fragrance and beautiful color of herbs and flowers are all part of wondrous divine bounties. And number four, both the humans and the jinn should be careful not to deny divine bounties.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witch hunt.
Hang here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
The U.S. government has extended the federal student loan payment pause for a sixth time. 46 million Americans are still in debt over their student loans. Now, progressive politicians warn inaction on student loans could hurt Democrats in the next midterm elections. Opposers of loan debt cancellation believe that these cancellations will only increase the current alarming inflation rate. Now, this is the second consecutive year that the federal budget deficit will exceed 10% of the GDP. A non-unified Democratic Party and opposition of Republicans over debt forgiveness has left the U.S. student loan debt crisis in limbo.
Never-ending student debts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And in today's episode, we'll discuss the student loan debt crisis. Will recent pause in payments bring much-needed relief to millions of borrowers? With university tuitions ever so high, will there ever be a solution to student loans? And has the government fulfilled its campaign pledge to solve this pressing crisis? As usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Scott Hutchins, speaker at Picture the Homeless, and Jameson Brewer, professor of social foundations of education out of the University of North Georgia. Stay with us.
Student loans have been in place in the United States for hundreds of years. However, the first federal student loan was provided in 1958 under the National Defense Education Act.
In the 1980s, the government drastically cut federal subsidized higher education funding, and as a result, university tuition skyrocketed. Then came widely available federal loans in the 1990s, which were not subsidized. So what are some of the problems with student loans today?
Well, most people can't afford to go to college without student loans unless they get some kind of scholarship, and most people don't get scholarships. And since most good jobs require you to have a college degree, whether you actually need one is another story, but since most of them require you to have a college degree, that's what they're asking for. So people need to go to college and get these degrees. And then they come out and they can't necessarily find jobs with these degrees because the market is oversaturated. So there are too many people trying to get this small number of jobs that require degrees. And then they're stuck with these loans that are often at very high percentage rates, often like 9% or so. And people try to defer them. And they can only defer them so long. Then you get like income-based repayment plans. Of course, if your income is nothing, you don't pay anything. But people are in this situation where they have this massive amount of debt. They have a promise where if they went to college, they'd be able to get a good job, and that promise hasn't been realized. A lot of people with college degrees have good jobs, but quite a few don't.
Now, over the past decade, student loan debt in America has more than doubled from $750 billion to $1.75 trillion. Now, this amount is almost half a trillion dollars more than total auto loan debt in the country. The Biden administration is under enormous pressure to reduce this burden of debt. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Elizabeth Warren are demanding the government cancel over $50,000 per borrower. So why have the debts increased so much over the past decades?
Student loans became important, particularly post the Reagan administration in the 1980s. Prior to that time, and here in the United States, state universities were heavily subsidized by state legislatures and state budgets. Following the 1980s, we in the United States had a reimagining of what higher ed would look like, specifically no longer conceiving of it as a public good or a common good, but thinking about it in terms as an individualistic commodity. Because of that, states have dramatically cut back their subsidies for higher education institutions in the United States, and as a result of that, those costs have been shifted to students. Because those costs have been shifted to students, and over the past couple of decades, the costs have increased over time, students have been forced to turn to student loans to pick up the difference. And so we've seen a shifting of state funding of education here in the United States towards individual funding. And again, because most students cannot afford out of pocket to pay for tuition and fees, they have to resort to student loans.
Some Democrats fear that if the Democrat government does not take a decision on canceling these debts, they would suffer in the upcoming midterm elections. According to a recent poll by the Student Borrower Protection Center and Data for Progress, nearly 66% of likely voters support the forgiveness of student debt. The poll also found that more than 70% of Latino and Black voters also support this initiative. So why did Biden make a campaign promise over student loans?
A lot of it is just bloat, because the money really isn't going to the professors. The professors' salaries have basically gone up with inflation. A lot of it is just they just expand all these administrative positions. A lot of it's redundant. A lot of it's administrators giving jobs to friends and friends' kids, and that increases bloat. Some of it's used for capital improvements. A lot of colleges do a lot of building that they don't necessarily need to do, just to try to make themselves look better. And so a lot of the money goes to those places, but the place that it doesn't go to is hiring more professors, giving the professors better wages.
Since Biden took office, the U.S. Department of Education has canceled around $2 billion in student loans for more than 100,000 borrowers who have filed application alleging fraud and deception against their school. This is while in the Trump administration, tens of thousands of similar requests were rejected by then Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. Now, there is a proposal that in schools that are proven to be problematic, entire groups of student loans should be canceled. So why are university tuition fees so high?
Institutions, especially these, as we have shifted to thinking about higher education as an individualistic commodity, universities have operated along the marketplace theory. That is that if they have the better and the nicest recreation centers or dormitories, they can attract students for their business, for their money. And so there's some increased costs there. Certainly, there have been some administrative bloat over the past couple of years. And I think that the combination of all of these things, and again, with the reduction of state subsidies, we've seen an increased cost over the last 30 years.
Opposers of loan debt cancellations believe that the payment pause that's been underway now for more than 2 years primarily benefits the wealthy and those with higher incomes. Students who enrolled in expensive private schools or went to graduate school are the ones who have the most debt. Now, these same students are the ones who are probably wealthier and earn more income. So is canceling debt now fair to those who have paid their loans off over the years?
the ones who've paid it, it's difficult to say that they're suffering more than those who haven't paid it, because if they've paid it, that means they could pay it. A lot of the people who have not paid it have not been able to pay it. So it's giving them relief, but it doesn't hurt the people who had their student loan debts and who paid off their student loan debts on their own. It's basically just a resentment issue. Was like, well, I paid off my student debts. Why didn't these other people? It's like, because you got a good job and the other people didn't. So I don't really think there's a very good argument against forgiving these student loans, because the people who paid them off are the ones who could.
Community college attendees normally have less than $10,000 in debt, while graduates from private universities that go to law schools or earn their MBA, for instance, might earn six figures and have probably accumulated more than $150,000 in debt. These wealthy graduates have enough salary to pay back their loans, but now they have not been paying for 2 years and might have their loans totally forgiven. Is it correct to invest so much in higher education and not more in other areas like housing?
Yeah, certainly an individual buying a house benefits the local economy. I think that it's clear that an education and what we invest into an education tends to provide better and broader impacts and a return on investment, to use the language of a business. So investments in education, again, not only impact and benefit the individual, but they benefit the communities that they live in, the states that they live in, and the nation as a whole. And so if we have the question of, you know, do we fund education or do we fund housing? I mean, for me, you know, I would like to have a conversation about how do we do both. But I do think that there tends to be a larger return on investment when we make those into education.
The other matter to take into account is that the poorest people in the U.S. probably have no student debt at all, since they have not gone to college. According to the Pew Charitable Trusts, only 15% of U.S. adults have student debts. Although young adults with a degree have more debt, with a bachelor's degree they earn 80% more than their peers in the same age group who have only earned a high school diploma. Why not pay off mortgages of low-income individuals instead of canceling student debt?
I think that's a good idea. I don't think it needs to be an either-or issue. I think there is a bit of an aspect of how much society pushed us to go to college, and that is a major factor in it, is basically because we were given all these promises that didn't work out. But I'm definitely in favor of people having their mortgages forgiven, especially if it's on their own home. If they're a landlord, I'm not so keen on that. But if they're just trying to survive, I would agree with forgiving that as well.
Now, there are reports that a program which was developed to aid low-income borrowers and eventually offer debt cancellation was not functioning the way it was intended to. More than 9 million borrowers have enrolled in the Income-Driven Repayment Plan, the IDR, which are developed for low-income people that can only make modest monthly payments. The NPR revealed that these plans have been badly mismanaged by loan servicers and the Department of Education. So has Biden fulfilled his campaign pledge on student loans?
I mean, I can certainly appreciate that disposition. I think that, you know, we also see this when it comes to K-12 funding. You know, there will be individuals in the community who will not have children, who attend public schools just because they don't have children, or perhaps their children are grown and have moved out, who will say it's unfair for them to continue to pay local taxes to support the local schools. But of course, the problem is that even without children or children who moved on, those individuals still benefit from a community and society that makes sure that the youngest of us have an education. The same thing for college. I mean, I can appreciate that somebody who spent the latter two decades paying off their student loans might feel left out. And I think that from a policy standpoint, there can be many ways in which some of the fees that have been paid or the interest that has been paid by those individuals over the last few decades can be reversed. They can be given tax credits. I'm not an economist, but certainly it doesn't have to be black and white that if you've already paid them off, you get nothing if we move forward with loan forgiveness. But the same thing is true across other policy areas. Myself, my children are a little bit older now, and we don't use pre-K anymore. But there are conversations about making universal pre-K free and affordable to everybody. That wasn't necessarily available to us, but I'm okay with us not having gotten it as long as people in the future and families in the future can get it.
Borrowers are supposed to see their loans canceled after 20 to 25 years, but new documents show that in 2021, while there were 4.4 million people who had been repaying their debts for at least 20 years, only 32 had their loan canceled under the IDR plans. Now, some senators are calling for an investigation into these mismanagements at the U.S. Department of Education. Has the government been successful in canceling loans and giving relief during the pandemic?
It hasn't at all. I mean, Jen Psaki basically said it's not going to happen. You're going to have to start paying again during the pandemic. It's really there hasn't been any change. I think it was just a campaign promise to try to get the youth vote, and I think he succeeded in getting the youth vote, but. He has not fulfilled the campaign promise in any way whatsoever. He had that little bit of a freeze for the pandemic, but then it was just announced that you're going to have to start paying again. The pandemic's not even over.
What is interesting is that despite opposition claims that the forgiveness of loans benefits the wealthy, a new Grinnell College National poll shows that only 12% of those making $25,000 a year or under oppose forgiving the loan, while 44% of those who make over $100,000 a year are against cancellation of debts, and those with high school diplomas support forgiving loans just as much as those with the higher education. Now, wouldn't canceling the debts cause inflation?
I'm not particularly clear on any connections with canceling student loans and Obamacare or access to healthcare. Certainly, because the United States does not have single-payer health care, individuals have to pay for that. If individuals are not having to spend money on paying for their student loans, that would certainly free up money for them to help afford their own personal medical insurance programs. But in terms of inflation, something like 65% of the current outstanding student loan debt is simply interest. It's projected interest on what student borrowers owe the federal government. So that's not necessarily money that they would have to print, so to speak, to cover if they forgive it. That's just simply money that the federal government would not collect, right? And so the entire $1.7 trillion of outstanding debt, if it were to be forgiven, more than half of it is just simple interest, right? It's not the actual principal. So would it contribute to inflation? I think that that's possible, but I also think given the context of the pandemic that we've been in for the last 2 years, since COVID began, the federal government has suspended the requirement to pay student loans. Me, as an example, I have student loans, and over the last 2 years, rather than paying towards those loans, I've used that money to spur the local economy, buying supplies to build onto my house and all those other things. So I really think that some of the impacts of inflation that would follow from forgiving student loans has already been priced in to the economy, because that extra money that student borrowers would then have in their pockets per month rather than paying, they've already had that for the last 2 years. So in terms of would it exacerbate inflation worse, I'm not quite certain on that.
With high inflation and the increase of living costs, millions of people owing student loans are still stressed and worried of what is to come. Millions of Americans are in debt their entire lifetime, and now that there has been a 2-year pause for student debt, experts are worried that borrowers have been spending their monthly installments on other costs of living and will not really be able to pick up where they left off once payment pause is over. Now it's time we check in with Abbas Mohtarim to see what he has for us this week.
Student loans, they are designed to keep corporations in control and to maintain this capitalist society. In this episode of Power to the People, we're going to take a look at the student loan debt crisis, and we'll look at why it's used to maintain capitalist control over our daily lives. Student loan debt, it has millions of Americans trapped in a cycle of perpetual debt. Currently, student loan debt is estimated to be nearly $1.75 trillion. And it's spread out amongst 46 million borrowers, and this is a huge number that only continues to rise. But it wasn't always this way. Shoot, if you go ask your parents, they're gonna tell you how college was cheaper back in their day. And they's not wrong, as one of the main people responsible for student loan debt is none other than Ronald Reagan. Even while he's in his grave, his policies, his economic policies, are still terrorizing people. In 1981, the Reagan administration, alongside Republicans and conservative Democrats, they passed a combination of tax and budget cuts that significantly cut student financial aid as well as Pell Grants. And thus, federal loans, they were only made available to a small amount of the population. This was part of the conservative ideology that there should be no handouts and this whole welfare queen idea that people should pick themselves up from their bootstraps and go get a job and work to go to college. And one of the reasons financial aid and Pell Grants were cut was also to deter black people from going to school. In the civil rights era, black students, they were beginning to get better access to education. And with that access, many black students, they were beginning to organize against white supremacist capitalism. Many of the radical movements of the 60s and the 70s, they started off on college campuses. And the biggest militant movement to be born out of the student movement was the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party, they had its roots on Merritt College campus in Oakland, California. The campus was so black and so militant, the Wall Street Journal, they called it a campus where black power won. J. Edgar Hoover, who was the director of the FBI, he declared an all-out war on the Black Panther Party and deemed them to be the biggest threat to national security. The government did anything and everything to destroy the party. At the height of the Black Panther Party's organizing, Ronald Reagan, who was the governor of California, and he worked actively to stop the Panthers. So it's to no surprise that he would attack the school system in order to stop revolutionary organizing that was going on campus. And with a significant cutting of financial aid from the government, college, in many ways how it always was now exclusively in many ways for those with wealth. And because, let's be real, those with wealth, they ain't trying to change society, they want to keep it how it is. And for those who can't afford college, they now got to take out loans in order to gain access to education. And this makes a huge barrier for education, and now black people are more likely to have to take out a loan to go to college and borrow more than the average college student. And white students, they are more likely to graduate with a rate of 250% more compared to black people. And this is all because of the financial challenges of the student loan crisis. The American government puts those who can't afford college in massive amounts of debt. And in many ways, this is entrapment. Rather than people now, being able to actually chase their dream job or dream career, they often have to compromise because of the debt that is looming over their head. People then, in some ways, can become slaves to capitalism rather than pursuing what they really want out of this life. It must be understood that education is truly a human right. But instead, the U.S. government, they spend billions of dollars on wars. And when it comes to education, they would rather its own people spend the rest of their life in debt. This parasitic system of capitalism would rather make these corporate banks trillions than actually serving its own people. But this, it's exactly what capitalism is. It is inhumane, it is anti-human, and all it cares about is profit. And the only people it cares about is the people who is profiting, which is the ruling class. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya, and do join us again next week for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. One of the battles where people abandon the Holy Prophet except for the commander of the faithful and a few others was the Battle of Hunayn, just like the Battle of Uhud. Well, this is the result of becoming arrogant. Of course, later, God the Exalted helped them and they managed to win. But this is the result of becoming proud of oneself. It will make one collapse. Not only will it make us collapse, but it will also make the group that moves around us collapse as well. This is why we read in supplication in Dua al-Kumail that you make me content with what you have given me and in all cases humble. You must be humble at all times. Humility means modesty and it is the opposite of arrogance. In supplication of Kumail, one asks this of God. One of the problems with arrogance if it shows up in us, is that it makes us walk away from the people. Arrogance makes us drift away from the people. The people become small in our eyes. We will humiliate them and we will naturally walk away from them. It makes us delusional about ourselves.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We think more highly of ourselves, more than what we are. This is the pest of arrogance. When we have a sense of self-importance, our mistakes become smaller in our eyes. Well, all of us make mistakes. All of us acknowledge in our hearts that we have some shortcomings. In certain cases, we know that we have made mistakes in such and such areas, but these mistakes become small in our eyes. That is why if someone else makes these mistakes, they seem grave to us, that our own mistakes seem small in our eyes. When mistakes seem insignificant, we become negligent about correcting them. We will not correct them and continue making them. These are the outcomes of arrogance. Notice how problematic this becomes. It deprives us of listening to friendly advice. Sometimes a person says something to us out of malice, and it might make us angry, but sometimes people criticize us in a friendly way, and we will not listen. Well, this is the first detriment, becoming arrogant.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Just ahead of International Quds Day, support for Palestinians is gaining momentum across Lebanon. This seminar was held in the Lebanese capital, where the speakers touched upon the significance of the Quds Day.
The significance of this holy day is that Imam Khomeini called on the free people of the world and the Muslims of the world and the Christians of the world to look at this historic, religious, and national enemy which wants to steal your sanctities and Judaize your city and bury your heritage. Be cautious on this threat and be united to face this aggressive enemy.
With the violent Israeli crackdown against the people of the Holy City in Palestine, activists say the sacrifices of the Palestinians will be fruitful and that Al-Quds Day is an occasion for Muslims to stand united in supporting the Palestinian cause.
Samahat al-Imam.
Imam Khomeini considered that an Arab and Islamic identity is incomplete without liberating Al-Quds. Therefore, this is a shame for those who continue to normalize ties with this enemy that continues to launch the most heinous assaults with their artillery and bullets. Thousands of wounded people have lost their eyesight, and many of them lost one eye or two. Hundreds of wounded people fell in the past assault. We will eventually pray in Al-Quds, no matter how long it takes.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General also stressed that Al-Quds is not merely a piece of land. It is rather an international humane cause. And Imam Khomeini established a cultural, ethical, and religious system to liberate it.
Mizatul Imam.
Imam Khomeini did not only make a declaration, he put a roadmap for the liberation of Palestine. He did not only call on the people to hold commemorations and events and make speeches to celebrate a day for Al-Quds, he directly closed the Israeli embassy and opened the Palestinian embassy. He founded Al-Quds Brigade as part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps, which would begin to form the army of 20 million. This would extend to the rest of the region and would support resistance inside Palestine. The only objective is to liberate Palestine.
All the speakers at the conference agreed that those who believe in the Palestinian cause are convinced more than ever that Al-Quds in Palestine will be liberated. International Quds Day has developed from being a day of solidarity and vocal support to being a day of practical coordination between the resistance factions. The Resistance Alliance has for once ratified a unified strategy of defense, and the focal point is Al-Quds. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Hundreds of thousands of refugees continue to flow into the European Union from Ukraine. The EU is providing residency permits, access to the labour market, housing, medical assistance, and free education for children for a period of at least